session of the Portland City Council. Prior to calling the roll, Commissioner Saltzman is unable to attend today's council session. His failure to participate would jeopardize the public interest, health, safety, or welfare. Therefore, unless there's an objection by any member of the council, Commissioner Saltzman will participate in today's hearing by teleconference for the entire session. Commissioner Fritz was also provided the opportunity, but she is unable to participate. Is there any objection to Commissioner Saltzman participating by phone? Sorry, Dan, there's no objection.
Great.
Please call the roll.
Fritz. Fish.
Here.
Saltzman.
Here.
Udaly.
Here.
Wheeler.
Here. The purpose of council meetings is to do the city's business. I'm going to shorten this a little bit. This is a hearing. There will be the opportunity for people to testify. You should assume that when people testify, not everybody will share the same opinion that you do. Our objective is to make sure that everybody feels safe, welcome, and respected in this chamber, regardless of their viewpoint or perspective. For that reason, we ask people not to applaud nor to boo anyone. A simple thumbs up is good, or a thumbs down if you don't like what you are hearing. Disruptions of people's testimony or council deliberations is not allowed. If anybody disrupts either people trying to testify or the city council trying to deliberate, you'll be asked to stop. If you don't stop, you'll be asked to leave. And if you don't ask to leave when asked to do so by security, you're subject to arrest for trespassing. That's a very rare circumstance. We don't want that to happen today. So let's all just be respectful of the fact that we are a community and we may approach the same issue from different perspectives and have different viewpoints. So with that, Carla, could you please read today's item?
Item 177, appeal on behalf of the Pearl District Neighborhood Association against Design Commission's decision of approval for design review with modifications and concurrent greenway review for the Fremont Apartments, a 17-story mixed-use building at 1650 Northwest NATO Parkway, LU16-278621, DZMGW.
Very good. Thank you. And first off today, the city attorney will be making some procedural announcements describing today's hearing.
Thank you, Mayor. Today is an evidentiary hearing. This means you may submit new evidence to council in support of your arguments. I'm going to talk a little bit about the order of testimony today. We begin with a staff report by the Bureau of Development Services staff for approximately 10 minutes. Following the staff report, City Council will hear from interested persons in the following order. The appellant will go first and has 10 minutes to present their case. Following the appellant, persons who support the appeal go next. Each of those persons will have 3 minutes to speak to council. After that, the principal opponent, in this case the applicant, has 15 minutes to address the City Council and rebut appellant's presentation. After the principal opponent, council will hear from persons who oppose the appeal, and each of those persons will have 3 minutes. Finally, the appellant will have 5 minutes to rebut the presentation of opponents to the appeal. Council may then close the hearing, deliberate, and take a vote on the appeal. If the vote is a tentative vote, the council will set a future date for adoption of findings and a final vote on the appeal. If council takes a final vote today, that will conclude the matter before council. There are several guidelines for those who will be testifying before council today. First, any letters or documents you wish to become part of the record must be given to the council clerk, Carla, on that side of chambers, after you testify. Similarly, originals or copies of slides, photos, drawings, maps, videos, or other items you show to council during your testimony, including any PowerPoint presentations, must be given to the council clerk to make sure they become part of the record. Second, testimony must be directed to the approval criteria. Any testimony, arguments, and evidence you present must be directed to the applicable approval criteria for this land use review or other criteria in the city's comprehensive plan or zoning code you believe apply to the decision. BDS staff will identify the applicable approval criteria as part of their staff report to council. Third, you must raise an issue clearly enough to give council and other parties an opportunity to respond to the issue. If you do not raise issues with enough specificity, you will be precluded from appealing to the Land Use Board of Appeals based on that issue. And finally, the applicant, must identify constitutional challenges to conditions of approval. If the applicant fails to raise constitutional or other issues relating to proposed conditions of approval with enough specificity to allow counsel to respond, the applicant will be precluded from bringing an action for damages in circuit court. And that concludes my remarks.
Very good. Do any members of the council wish to declare a conflict of interest?
Mayor, I don't have a conflict of interest or ex parte conversations to disclose, but as is our custom, both proponents and opponents of the appeal have met with members of my staff.
Very good. Does any member of the public wish to ask Commissioner Fish about those contacts? Or does any other member of the City Council wish to declare a conflict of interest? No other member of the council has declared a conflict of interest. Do any members of the council have ex parte contacts to declare or information gathered outside of this hearing to disclose other than what Commissioner Fish has just indicated? I would like to say that I've seen a number of newspaper articles and news stories on this subject. Does anybody wish to ask me any questions about that? Seeing none, any other commissioners have any ex parte contacts to declare information gathered outside of this hearing that they'd like to disclose?
My office has received written testimony, and at least one member of my staff has met with individuals involved, but nothing to declare.
Very good. Anybody in this chamber have any questions for Commissioner Udaly based on the information that she has just provided?
Mayor, could we have the two members of council whose staff had met with some of the parties specify whether or not their staff conveyed that information to them or did not, please?
They did not convey any information.
So that's a good question. So what I get in advance of all land use hearings is a memo from staff laying out the issues. And in some instances, it contains recommendations from staff or issues to be highlighted, but it generally doesn't contain any ex parte information. It's the staff view. It's almost like a memorandum from a law clerk in a judicial proceeding, and that is what I get generally in these proceedings.
Does anybody have any questions of Mr. or Commissioner Fish on this matter? Seeing none, have any members of the council made any visits to the site involved in this matter? I'm certainly familiar with the site. I run by it periodically.
I'm familiar with the site. I haven't done any particular inspection.
I'll take you with me next time. Very good. Does any member of the public wish to ask any questions with regard to disclosed visits to the site? Seeing none. Do council members have any other matters that need to be discussed before we begin the hearing? Commissioner Saltzman, I assume we're good to go for you?
Yes.
All right, very good. So let's start with the staff report. Approximately 10 minutes. Good afternoon. Name for the record. We don't need people's addresses.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. I'm Ben Nielsen, Senior Planner with the Bureau of Development Services. Today I'll be providing some basic context for the Fremont Apartments proposal and summarizing the final findings and decision of the Design Commission. There's a long list of appeal issues to address, so I may need an extra 3 to 4 minutes.
For the records, the staff report is an approximate time.
Okay.
And so you take the time you think you need to lay out the issue for the council.
I appreciate that. Thank you. First, the zoning context. The site is located in the North Pearl subarea of the River District subdistrict of the larger Central City Plan District. The site is zoned EXDG, which is short for Central Employment with Design and Greenway Overlays. The site has a base floor area ratio, or FAR, of 2-to-1 maximum. Additional FAR up to 3-to-1 may be earned through bonuses, transfers from historic resources, or from transfers in a central city master plan. Three types of bonus were earned on this site: the residential bonus, the locker room bonus, and the eco roof bonus, together equaling 2.72 to 1 of bonus FAR. Total proposed FAR on the site equals 4.26 to 1, leaving some bonus FAR unused. The site has a base height limit of 100 feet. 75 additional feet may be allowed through modification to the North Pearl Subarea Height Opportunity Area Standards. Areas where this is allowed are shown in green crosshatching on the map. Floors above 100 feet in height have limits on their floor plate size. The height of this proposal tops out at 175 feet at the top of the parapet, with an additional 10 feet granted through modification to the base zone standard for rooftop mechanical screen. More on this later. This land use review consists of three parts, each with its own approval criteria. For the design review component, the approval criteria are the Central City Fundamental Design Guidelines and the River District Design Guidelines. These two documents are separate from the zoning code. For requested modifications through design review, the approval criteria are found in Zoning Code Section 33.825.040. For the Greenway review component, the approval criteria are found in Zoning Code Section 33.440.350 and the separate Willamette Greenway design guidelines. The site is located along Northwest NATO Parkway, adjacent to the Willamette River, and at the end of an existing segment of the Greenway Trail. The Fremont Bridge lies to the northwest. The site is 72,080 square feet in area and is essentially flat. It is currently developed as a surface parking lot for the adjacent three-story office building. And here's a bird's eye view of the site. The green line on the image shows the extent of the Greenway Trail in this area. The proposal can be summarized as a 17-story residential mixed-use building with approximately 6,600 square feet of retail space on the ground floor and 275 residential units above. 152 parking spaces are proposed in a garage on a portion of the ground floor and in the basement. The proposal also includes a 60-foot-wide pedestrian plaza on the north side and reconstructs the Greenway Trail on this site. The Design Commission ultimately voted 3-1 to approve this land use review. The appellant cites 13 design guidelines as not being met, challenges 6 of the 7 modification requests, and challenges interpretations of 4 sections of the zoning code. I'll briefly touch on each of these points with responses from the Design Commission's final findings and decision. Guidelines A2, A3, A3-1, A5-1-1, A5-1-5, A5-3, A5-4, and C-4 speak to the proposal's response to its context. The Design Commission found that the proposal supports the river and the Greenway Trail, has a massing concept that takes the view of the Fremont Bridge into account, incorporates a similar scale and massing in its building as other development in the North Pearl, and incorporates balconies, large areas of glazing, active ground floor spaces, and the large plaza, which reflect the North Pearl context and orient towards the river. Guidelines A4 and B5 speak to the proposal's response to the pedestrian environment. The Design Commission found that these guidelines are met with a series of storefront windows along the building's 3 public frontages, balconies, decks, roof terraces, and windows which orient to the river and the plaza, and the restaurant space which helps to activate both. Guideline C5, design for coherency. The Design Commission found that the proposal meets this guideline by setting consistent rules for articulation and fenestration of the building's distinct masses with a well-integrated material palette. From the Willamette River Design Guidelines, the Design Commission found the proposal meets these guidelines by approximating the city's 200-foot block pattern, providing attractive ground floor uses along the greenway, active ground floor uses along the greenway, providing large areas of glazing and balconies overlooking the greenway, and connecting the Greenway Trail to Northwest NATO through the proposed plaza. Regarding requested modifications to development standards, the appellant states that it was not mandatory for the Design Commission to approve any of the requested modifications and that they should have instead been reviewed through the adjustment process. In addition to providing approval criteria for modification requests, the zoning code also gives authority to the Design Commission to consider modifications of site-related development standards as part of the design review process. These modifications are done as part of design review and are not required to go through the adjustment process. However, modifications that are denied may be requested as an adjustment through the adjustment process. Moving into the modifications, modification number one addresses height and seeks to allow rooftop mechanical equipment and screening which extend above the height limit of 175 feet to be located closer than 15 feet to the roof edges on the street-facing facade and to allow them to cover 73% of the tower roof area, which is greater than 10% allowed by this code section. The Design Commission found that this mechanical screen is well integrated into the tower massing and that the purpose of the standard, which controls overall bulk and intensity of development, is met on balance with the small portion of the building footprint affected compared to the total building. Modification number two addresses standards for bicycle racks and seeks to allow long-term bicycle parking racks hung on walls in the bike storage room to be spaced at 1 foot 4 inches by 6 feet rather than the required 2 feet by 6 feet. The commission found that the narrower spacing allows more room for active uses on the ground floor, better meeting several guidelines, and they found that the purpose of the standard, which is intended to ensure that bikes can be locked without undue inconvenience and are reasonably safeguarded from damage, is met with a condition of approval requiring a minimum 6-inch vertical stagger between racks. Modification number three addresses the North Pearl subarea height opportunity area standards and seeks to allow the height of the building to be 175 feet, exceeding the base height of 100 feet, and to allow the length of the building facades above 100 feet in height to exceed 120 feet in length. The Design Commission found that shifting building program and mass from the podium to the tower and allowing tower dimensions to exceed 120 feet in length allows for more of the Fremont Bridge to be visible than a building built up to 100 feet base height, better meeting guideline A2, and allows additional light and air to penetrate to the greenway and river over lower parts of the building.
So could you help me understand?
Absolutely.
And by the way, for everybody, regardless of where you are on this, questions stop the clock, just so don't feel like it takes from your time. So what does the orange box represent in this diagram?
The orange box in this diagram represents a building mass built up to the 100-foot base height.
And is that allowed under the base zoning?
That's allowed under Chapter 33.510, Central City Plan, yes.
Okay.
That would be considered the base zone height for the Central City in this area.
Got it. And so what you were just saying then was they were allowed to build up higher as a result of bringing the base in closer. Is that a
Correct.
Fair interpretation of
Correct.
What you were saying?
Yes. The okay. commission found that if they were able to lower the podium massing, which is the, I don't think I have a thing to point at here, but it's the lower stories of the building that extend out on either side.
I see. Okay.
They could get more view of the Fremont Bridge. And this view is taken from the Fields Park.
I see. Thank you.
Regarding the purpose of the standard, which is lengthy, the Design Commission found that it's also met. The purpose includes goals of increasing visual permeability, preserving visual and physical access to the river, allowing for light and air to penetrate to the public realm, and ensuring that bonus height does not significantly affect views of the Fremont Bridge. The Commission also found that these moves balance the purpose to develop a dense, active urban waterfront, while at the same time retaining the iconic stature of the Fremont Bridge in the skyline. To better meet that purpose statement, the Commission imposed a condition of approval requiring the retail space on the ground floor to remain in retail sales and services use for the life of the building. Modification number four addresses the required open area development standards, shadow standard, and seeks to allow up to 84% of the required plaza to be in shade at noon on April 21st of any year. The standard requires that no more than 50% of the plaza be in shade at that time. The Design Commission found that the proposed plaza width and location on the north side of the site between the existing office building and the proposed building approximate a standard right-of-way in the Pearl District and reflects the emerging development pattern in the North Pearl waterfront area. They also found that this allows for preservation of views to the river from Northwest NATO Parkway and portions of the North Pearl, such as the future intersection of Northwest 12th and Raleigh. The Design Commission found that the purpose of the standard, which is intended to allow for adequate amounts of light and air, in addition to providing recreational opportunities and options for pedestrian circulation, was met on balance, as the plaza would only be 26.5% covered in shade by 1 p.m. on April 21st. Excuse me, I should have advanced my slide there. Modification number 5 addresses two of the North Pearl subarea waterfront development standards. The first part of the modification addresses the setbacks for all development from the Willamette River standard and seeks to allow portions of the building over 35 feet in height to extend into the setback area as shown on the diagram in red. For this standard, the Commission found that better views of the Fremont Bridge are provided by shifting massing to the tower and allowing it to extend into the setback. They also found that subsequent lower podium heights allow for larger areas of planted rooftop closer to the Greenway Trail.
Before you move off of that,
yes,
because I know this is a point of contention, so I want to make sure I understand it.
Yes.
So the building clearly is in the Greenway setback, and you are saying that there are exceptions made to the setback rule that have to do with the view of the Fremont Bridge. Could you explain that?
Absolutely. So the diagonal line is the setback in question here. There's actually two Greenway setbacks, and we're talking about the diagonal line.
Got it.
The Commission found, and this is related to one of the other modifications to height, allowing the building to go up to 175 feet, that moving some of the massing from the podium, which is the lower portion of the building shown
here. That was
here,
the orange box in your previous?
Right. That would extend up significantly higher here.
Okay.
The 100 feet.
Okay. And so it is at the discretion in this case of design review if they
project into
take
that,
less of the massing from the base and put it into the height, they have that discretion to cross into the diagonal Greenway setback?
Correct. Yes, through a modification.
Through a modification. Okay,
yes.
Thank you.
Yep.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
On a couple of occasions, you've mentioned better views of the Fremont Bridge. And so from the code perspective, what is the zone that's encompassed that has a view of the Fremont Bridge, and how do we determine whose view we're talking about?
In general, when I'm talking about views of the Fremont Bridge, I'm talking about views from the Fields Park, which is really one of the primary places you can see it in a public setting. And that's basically what the Design Commission focused their findings on as well. No one was taking into account any private views, only public views. And I might add that this view is not a protected view, so we're just working within the guidelines, within the context of the design guidelines approval criteria to preserve some of that view.
So I had a little something to do with the Fields Park. So let's assume this building was coming to us before the Fields Park was built. And what would then be the perspective that we'd be concerned about?
I think we'd have a lot more difficult time looking at views of the bridge as being an encumbrance on this project. We'd probably be taking a look at views only from rights of way, such as Northwest 12th Avenue or Northwest 13th Avenue, which I don't believe are blocked by this building.
Okay, thank you.
I also have a question.
Commissioner Udaly, sure.
Thank you. It appears that the property north, adjacent on the north side, has the same zoning.
Correct.
How about to the south?
It also has the same zoning.
Okay, so when and if those lots are developed, we're going to be looking at similar height allowances.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, continuing on to the second part of the modification to this standard, the maximum building dimension standard, to allow the building dimension perpendicular to the river to be 230 feet 9 inches in length, exceeding the maximum dimension allowed of 200 feet. For this standard, the Design Commission found that allowing the building to be longer perpendicular to the river results in a narrower building parallel to it, better meeting guidelines that aim for better connections, visual and physical, to the river and Greenway Trail. For both standards, the Commission found that the purpose statement, which states simply that the standards are intended to assure both frequent views of the river and physical connections to the river and its activities, are not negated by a modification to either standard. Last modification. Modification number 7 addresses parking area setbacks and seeks to allow a required setback, landscape setback between the south lot line and the driveway to be 2 feet wide and screened with a 3-foot tall concrete wall for a portion of its length and with 3-foot tall evergreen shrubs for the remainder, instead of the required 5-foot setback planted with trees and shrubs. The Design Commission found that allowing the setback area to be reduced in width allows for a larger area of the ground floor along Northwest NATO to be programmed with either active ground floor uses within the building or devoted to pedestrian-oriented open space. They found that the purpose of the standard, which is intended to create an environment that is inviting to pedestrians and transit users, is met with the urban frontage along Northwest NATO Parkway. Regarding the appellant's final 3 challenges...
Can you go back to that, please?
Yes,
so
of course.
Does that mean that that space is required to remain an open space?
So we're just looking at the... it's probably hard to see on the screen, but it's a blue dotted area on the right side of the drawing.
Right, I see it.
Yeah, that's required technically to have a 5-foot setback with plantings in it, including trees. And the
right, but you're saying the exception is being given for the smaller set of trees.
Yes, exactly.
Because it creates more of an open space. Is that a public open space or a private open space?
That's referring to the plaza, so that's a public plaza.
Okay, thank you.
The plaza at the on the left side of this diagram.
Got it.
Yep. Sorry. Regarding the appellant's final 3 challenges to interpretations of the zoning code, staff has submitted information about those interpretations to council staff and contends that the code has been interpreted and applied fairly and accurately. And I can, of course, go into more detail if desired. The alternatives facing council today: deny the appeal and uphold the Design Commission's decision to approve the land use review. Deny the appeal and uphold the Design Commission's decision to approve with additional conditions of approval and/or design revisions. Grant the appeal and overturn the Design Commission's decision to approve, thereby denying the appeal. That concludes my presentation.
Very good. Thank you. Any questions? Very good. Next up is the appellant, 10 minutes. And I realize this is a complex issue, so unless legal counsel overrides me, if you need more time, the way we have historically handled this is we would document that additional time over 10 minutes and give the principal opponent that same additional time. That's good. Okay, great.
Yes, that's fine.
So start with your 10 minutes and let's see how you do. Good afternoon.
Thank you, Mayor and members of the council. My name is Jeff Kleinman. I'm the attorney for the Pearl District Neighborhood Association. We're going to try to keep it within the 10, which means I've got to move very quickly.
Thank you, sir.
Because the folks to my right have architectural and planning expertise vis-a-vis the criteria here, and I'll introduce them and they'll do the lion's share here.
Thank you. Basically,
what we're talking about in a nutshell is a project that might work elsewhere on a city block at some remove from the river, but not in its position on Front Avenue adjacent to the river and the Greenway. The height, the massing, the FAR, and other features of the proposal are inappropriate to the site and can't be approved under the approval criteria we've addressed in the appeal document. Now, it might be that there would be an argument to be made if this project were able to argue, if the proponents could argue that we're providing affordable units and we've got to have this height and this mass and get close to the Greenway to jam those affordable units in. But that's not the case. This application came in under the wire, and there are no affordable units proposed. The application depends upon several modifications, as I say, none of which can be justified under the standard for those modifications. And it also depends upon a stacking, not just of the modifications to the standards, but also of two totally inappropriate precedents, the Waterfront Pearl and, on the other side of the Fremont Bridge, the Bridgetown Lofts, which are far, far more respectful of the site, of the river, and of the approval standards. And I was very familiar with the Waterfront Pearl, not so much with the Bridgetown Lofts. I suggest taking a walk on the Greenway up that way and seeing how respectful that development is and how little precedent it provides for this project. This project does set, if approved, a very dangerous precedent for riverfront development in this area, which will wipe out the view of the Fremont Bridge. There will be no further argument against such development if this is approved. So, for the benefit of council and not to take too much time, we have prepared draft findings of allowance of the appeal and denial of the application. I've given those to the clerk at the commencement of the hearing, and there are copies for council and copies also for the city attorney. With that, let me introduce first Peter Gramlich, who has an architectural background, and then George Galster will speak, and he is a distinguished professor of planning.
Thank you, Jeffrey. Greetings, Mr. Mayor, City Commissioners. Thank you for the chance to lend my voice to the discussion. I'm the tieless one at the moment between the attorney and the urban planner. I also own Gramlich Design and Planning in Portland. My degrees are in architecture, and I am a LEED accredited professional. I've worked for big firms in Boston and in Germany, and I've helped design projects in the US, Europe, the Middle East, and Asia, including high-rises. I teach architecture at PCC Sylvania, where my students learn about building design and construction and are part of the next generation of people who will help shape the Portland of the future. As we emphasize in class, architecture is inseparable from proper planning. Both are at issue here. I've tried to evaluate this Fremont Place proposal as one of them that my students might submit for studio review. If they did, it would not likely get past the schematic. It wouldn't. In other words, we would say, back to the drawing board. And why? Because this proposal violates the most basic principle of design. First, do no harm to your surroundings. The city has both mandatory and discretionary criteria to prevent such harm from taking place. And in this case, as outlined in the appeal statement filed by the association, the project as proposed violates most of these criteria. Speaking from my expertise and experience, and taking all of the approval criteria into account, I would simply note the following 4 points. One. The project has an inappropriate massing concept, one which does not respect Portland's block pattern and does not reflect the identity of the Pearl District neighborhood. It detracts from the neighborhood by sealing it off from the river and setting a precedent for more of the same in the future. At its core, it is not part of the neighborhood. It is a barrier. Two, it detracts from the character of the waterfront area rather than reinforcing it. It seals the Willamette River Greenway off from the neighborhood and the public as a whole, effectively seizing it for private benefit. Three, the proposal does not in any way complement the context of existing buildings. It instead establishes a dangerous new context, a precedent for overscaled massing and for walling off this stretch of the Willamette in its entirety. And finally, four, the proposed design itself lacks a clear vision or even unifying elements. It tends to present itself as a contorted Rubik's Cube, twisting and convoluting itself in an attempt to maximize out floor area. As you take these failings into account, bear in mind that code also requires each of the requested modifications to the city's standards to, quote, better meet design review requirements. In other words, the modifications must benefit the design itself, not just the applicant's pocketbook. Here, they do not. you should send this project back to the drawing board for a design that meets the city's requirements. Thank you for your consideration, and I'll pass it on to George.
Let me just ask you one question. In light of the likelihood that there's going to be additional development along that stretch of the river, what standard would you have us apply in terms of the context? Because the, I'm somewhat reluctant to embrace a standard that says we have to be bound by a context that is likely within a number of years to change, and it's a context that's a residue of a different set of uses along the river. So, what is the appropriate standard where we know there's going to be redevelopment?
Sure, that's a valid point. Of course, we can't just say this. The only context we're responding to is that which existed from 1960 and low-slung industrial buildings, right? But context is a sensitive, delicate, important matter, and I think it lies at the core of everything we're talking about here. I suppose another way to think about it is precedent. What kind of precedent do we want to be setting with the public and private faces that we're presenting our citizens, our greenway, our natural areas, our parks, our views? So I think it's hard to lecture as to what context should be. I just am wary about the precedent that we're setting if we build something of this scale and size.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. There are three major reasons for sustaining the appeal of the PDNA. The Design Commission incorrectly applied design guidelines and Portland zoning regulations.
And, sir, I'm sorry to interrupt. You have to say your name for the record. Sorry about that.
Sorry, George Gallister.
Thanks, George.
Thanks. First of all, it approved building modifications that degrade design review requirements. It set a dangerous precedent for the long-term development of the River District, and it accepted the developer's miscalculation of site area for the purposes of determining allowable building mass. As Mr. Nielsen pointed out, these are the applicable guidelines that the Design Commission must take into consideration. If you look at these guidelines and all these documents, they are quite consistent in their desire to enhance Portland's personality. And they give specific ways in which our building is supposed to enhance our personality by first emphasizing Portland themes, integrating the river into the community, supporting parks and public spaces, enhancing and protecting views, and reinforcing special districts. But let's not take these in generality. Let's see specifically what the guidelines say with regard to each of these 5 points. Emphasizing Portland themes. Quote, there are many themes unique to Portland's culture and geography that promote the city's identity and image. Examples of elements that identify Portland include roses and bridges. Integrating the river into the community. The Willamette River is the center city's most significant geographic feature. The bridges that cross the river reinforce the river's role as the binding element of the center city. Supporting parks and public spaces. The Tanner Creek Parks, that is Jameson Square, Tanner Springs Park, and Fields Park, function as both a neighborhood park system and as one of Portland's primary promenades, extending the North Park blocks northward to the Willamette River. Thus, we aim to strengthen and enhance the Tanner Creek Parks. Enhancing and protecting views. Quote, taking advantage of surrounding view opportunities increases the desirability of living, visiting, and working in the center city. Thus, we aim to size and place new buildings to protect existing views. Reinforcing special districts. Design should acknowledge that the context of its surroundings with an approach that responds to the character and identity of 3 blocks in every direction. Let's keep these in mind as we look at the decisions the Design Commission made. First of all, they approved building modifications that degrade these design review requirements. The zoning code clearly allows only modifications that both will better meet the applicable design standards and be consistent with the purposes of the standards in question. The purposes of the standards in question are clearly spelled out in the zoning code. Some of these were nicely reviewed by Mr. Nielsen. Quote, increase access to sunlight along the greenway, facilitate visual and physical access to and along the riverfront, create expanded opportunities for views of the river as viewed from locations west of the riverfront. And last but hardly least, ensure that bonus height granted to sites adjacent to the Fremont Bridge do not significantly affect views of or diminish the aesthetic qualities of the bridge or its iconic stature in the Portland skyline. The Design Commission essentially approved modifications that allow the Fremont apartments to be taller and fatter than are permitted by code. Does this supersized building better meet and be more consistent with the purposes of the design standard? I think the answer is obvious. Point two, the Design Commission set dangerous precedents for the long-term development of the River District. Future developers will expect that they, too, will be allowed to build as massively as the Fremont Apartments. Consider what this will mean for our future. It will convert this current picture to this picture, if we permit the Fremont Apartments as currently proposed. The developer immediately to the south will be able to build that. The developer of Centennial Mills will be able to build that. And I ask again, would this enhance Portland's personality? Would this emphasize Portland themes? No, it minimizes the bridge and the river. Would this integrate the river into the community? No, it walls off the river from the community. Would this support public parks and public spaces? No, it degrades the value of the Fields Park. It degrades the value of our greenway. Does it enhance and protect views? Here, notice the doublespeak the developer is trying to get you to believe. We enhance the view by only obscuring half of the bridge instead of all of it. And last, does this reinforce special districts? No. Quite the contrary. This development will set in motion a long-term development pattern that will be the poison pill for the Pearl. Third, the Design Commission accepted the developer's miscalculation of the site area for purposes of determining allowable building mass. Again, the zoning code is clear. All measurements involving development standards are based on property lines and area of the site after dedication of public rights of way. The developer did not do this, and as a result, they exaggerated their buildable site by 70%. We wouldn't be having this discussion if the basics of planning were followed correctly in this case. To conclude, the case of the Fremont Apartments represents a crucial decision point for Portland. Will we hold fast to our duly adopted plans for a humane, livable, distinctive city, or will we build at all costs, including violating our own zoning codes? The Design Commission has opted for the latter, and we hope that you will opt for the former, because this is simply the wrong building for a special site. Thank you.
Thank you. Colleagues, any questions before we
I just have
on
one
next?
Question.
Commissioner
Mayor.
Fish?
Mr. Kleinman, I think at the beginning of your presentation you mentioned in passing that this building would not be subject to our affordable housing requirements under inclusionary housing. I'm glad you mentioned that because over 15,000 units were filed ahead of the deadline. So with all due respect to some of the critics of this policy, we're not going to really know whether inclusionary housing has had any potential positive or negative impact until the 15 to 20,000 units in the pipeline are built that aren't subject to inclusionary housing. There were highly motivated developers that beat the deadline, and so we've got 3 years of product in the pipeline. And it seems like it's going to make it extremely difficult to gauge the effectiveness of inclusionary housing with all this development that's not covered. But let's just take inclusionary housing as a concept. Had this building been subject to that requirement, and so if there were more affordable units in this building, would that change your analysis at all in terms of public benefit?
I'm not sure it would change my analysis very much, but I think it might change the council's analysis a little bit, because there would be a further argument of additional public benefit for this humongous massing and overshadowing of the greenway, which is quite unparalleled. Again, as an advocate for my client, I have to say, you know, it might not affect my arguments, but it might affect the council's perspective.
Okay, that's helpful. Thank you.
Very good.
I had a question, Mayor.
Commissioner Saltzman.
I was intrigued by the statement the developer has exaggerated the site area by 70%. Could somebody elaborate what they mean by exaggerated?
I can, Commissioner Salzman. This is Jeff Kleinman again. We set this out to some extent in the appeal narrative that we filed, and it's set out in a bit more detail in the proposed findings sustaining the appeal that we've circulated. But it's also something that's going to be the subject of some detailed testimony going forward. There's a very organized presentation coming up to, but in a nutshell, on that point, there are several portions of the site that have been included in the square footage for development purposes, which do not belong in the calculation, and they're very significant. One is that the applicant measures the site down into the Willamette, down to the ordinary low water line, when in fact, by state law, which is set out in the findings we wrote, the state and the people of Oregon own up to the ordinary high water line. And we're not sure what that distance is that's been included, but it's a lot and it's got to go. This application isn't sustainable as it is. And then the other component of that, to answer briefly, is for all practical purposes, the Greenway area itself, the Greenway trail and path, and the 60-foot strip on the north that's a public walkway to the river are essentially dedicated whether as public or private rights of way, and as such, by city code, and we cite the code in what we've submitted, they are not to be included in the developable area for the purpose of calculating FAR. So you wind up with a much, much lower permissible FAR. By my calculation, for what it's worth, at most 40,000 square feet is the developable area, and not something closer to 80,000 square feet as characterized in the application.
Okay.
So hope that answers.
Thank you. Yes.
Very good. Thank you.
Thanks again, Mayor.
Appreciate Councilor. It. Next up, we have the principal opponent. You get 15 minutes, but the appellant went 2 minutes and 4 seconds over. So if you want, you have 17 minutes and 4 seconds. I'm sorry. I'm out of order. Sorry. Thank you. Supporters of the appeal. Feel free, Carla, when you have a suspicion, you're usually right. So shout it out.
Okay.
So, yes. How many do we have?
36.
Okay, so here's my usual speech. Quantity is not as important as quality, and if people feel like you are hearing other people already make your comments, absolutely feel free to either just thumbs up, or if you want to come up and stand behind somebody, appoint somebody from your group, if you will, and you may go up and stand behind them and be recognized, or alternatively, just come to the mic and say everything that I have wanted to say has been said, in my opinion, is X, so that you have registered your opinion for the record. But you do not necessarily need to feel that you need to repeat the same arguments 36 times if that is the case. First three, please, Carla.
Are Stan Pinkin, John Wilkinson, and Kurt Sorensen. And they'll be followed by Alan Potts, Christina Del Rosario, and Mark Windham.
And again, just name for the record, please. We don't need people's addresses. Stanley, do you want to kick us off, please?
Yes, I will. Good afternoon. Stan Pankin, president of the Pearl District Neighborhood Association. My testimony is going to be more at a 30,000-foot level rather than getting down into the nitty-gritty. You have just heard compelling expert testimony on why the proposed Fremont Apartments is the wrong project in the wrong place. But this appeal, approved by a significant majority of our board, is about far more than a building. It's about who we are, where we're going, our vision, and what we are leaving to our children, grandchildren, and generations beyond. Portland has been a model for visionary thinking, smart urban growth, and innovative planning. Having worked with the Planning Bureau as a member of the Portland Plan and Comprehensive Plan Community Involvement Committee for 7 years, I've seen firsthand the passion and dedication of our planners in developing policies that work for the betterment of our city for everyone. It's not just about buildings. It's about considering every aspect of our daily lives, from where we live, where we work, where we play, where we walk, where we bike, where we drive, how we all interact as a community, and how that works in harmony. It's about livability, sense of place, and connection to our rivers and mountains that are all ingredients that make us such an amazing city. The Fremont Apartments, as currently designed, is a contradiction of those values, our aspirations, and established policies that make people want to be here in the first place. The Pearl District does not oppose development. The neighborhood has been a mecca for smart development, guided by visionary planning that takes into account all the values just mentioned. We are a vibrant and diverse community because of that. But after hearing our community's concern in a public process, we do oppose misplaced development that will harm and detract from the character, spirit, and soul of this unique neighborhood, not to mention the river that belongs to all of Portland. As you heard, the Design Commission's approval of this project was a close 3-to-1 vote, with the minority opinion representing much of what we are speaking of today. That opinion was by the Commission's chair, Julie Livingston, who I believe is here today. As there does not appear to be a process in this current appeal format whereby a minority opinion is heard, in the spirit of City Council's recent resolution that all voices be heard, I am asking that Julie be invited to express her opinion for your consideration. We are in the throes of enormous growth, where rampant development has outpaced our ability to control it.
Stan, I'm going to need you to rock.
I'm there. While we await approval of Central City 2035, please do not allow this massive, misguided project go forward as a contradiction to all that we value and cherish.
Thank you. Thank you, Stan. And I don't like to be the microphone, please. So please, when you see 30 seconds, that's when the yellow light comes on. Please stop when you hit the red. Thanks. Good afternoon.
Thanks. Thanks, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Mayor. And greetings from the tourist section across the lobby over there. I won't try to go into the detailed technical aspects of these things. That's been well covered already. But my comments to you are the community reasons for denying this project. It really involves what we want Portland to be and going forward. The waterfront of the Willamette has been in the entire history of the city for various reasons that have changed over time. It's still very important to the city and the people that live here now. Parks. Portland has a national and international reputation with regard to city parks, and that needs to be reinforced, not torn down. And the Fremont Bridge. Of course, it was put in place at great community input and great expense. It's now an icon. It's shown in most pictures that relate to the city, promotional materials, and the like, as you well know. Just a note on the Fields Park. You probably know this already. I hope that you do. But it's quickly become a very heavily used park. People walk there daily from several blocks away in all three directions to get to the park. The dog leash off area has a lot to do with that. And just as I left the community a couple hours ago now, I counted 23 people in the park on a snow day, 12 dogs, and the people that take care of them. And often we look on the park, we'll see as many as 20 dogs or more in there at one time. It's quite a thing, and that's going to get only more overused and undersized as regard all these additional units come on stream. There must be 1,000 within walking distance coming up that are yet unoccupied. So seems to me that we've got here what is a greedy San Francisco landowner who's trying by all means and certain amount of pulling the wool to maximize the amount of living units that can be shoehorned into that tight space. And I would just ask the landowner and developers, if this were San Francisco, the hometown of the owner, and you were proposing this building to be between the Marina Park and the Golden Gate Bridge, how do you think it might be dealt with?
Thank you, sir.
Good time.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Kurt Sorensen. I'm a resident of the Pearl District. We bought here after researching the various land use plans for this district. The proposed Fremont apartments will destroy that good planning framework. I oppose the proposal for the reasons set forth in detail in my filed testimony. The consistent theme of the plans since the central plan of 1987 require that building height and bulk be scaled down from the west as the river is approached. In the North Pearl waterfront, that means stepping down height from the west part of the Pearl District. The primary zoning tool used to accomplish this is a FAR of 2-1, as opposed to the 4-1 or 5-1 ratios applied in the Pearl District west of NATO. This is augmented by other provisions such as height restrictions, facade restrictions, open space and view corridor restrictions, code provisions to impose a Portland block pattern for lot size, and the greenway overlay. The block pattern section are important along the river because there are no streets to create the normal grid pattern. The problem with relying principally on FAR is that the base must be defined so that the base floor area can be determined. If it is not, then FAR loses its regulatory and predictive value. See the graphs at page 4 of my testimony. The ordinary application of FAR in the central city is to a standard block of 40,000 square feet. The entire area of the block is thus buildable. That works well, but as discussed at pages 2 and 3, the scheme collapses on unusual lots such as those along the river. The code defines FAR in the traditional way. It is ambiguous in defining site. Reliance on unpublished custom or habit fails if there are no constraints. The unintended consequence is a building that is at odds with the zoning and plans. Compare Fremont to Waterfront Pearl, where size was limited by sound zoning constraints. My written testimony illustrates the cumulative effect of an exaggerated base floor area when bonuses are applied. If the goals of the plan and the code are to be met, the building restrictions must be treated the same as the rights of way in the downtown blocks. Waterfront Pearl conforms to the block grid pattern. Fremont Apartments does not. Concluding, the approach used for Fremont Apartments will completely subvert all existing plans. The use of FAR as restrictive and predictive will be lost. Allowing this building would be like cramming a whale into a bathtub and would provide a negative precedent for the remaining parcels along the river. It would predict a high hard wall against the river, separating the river from the rest of the community. In the downtown Pearl, the proposed building would fit. On a standard block, it would have a perfectly acceptable FAR of 7.68-1. That is not true here.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, all three of you. Next three, please.
Next three are Alan Potts, Christina Del Rosario, and Mark, I believe it's Linden for the last name.
Lindell,
thank you. And they'll be followed by Michael Roberts, Bruce Kaplan, and Michael Coates.
Good afternoon.
Afternoon. Thank you. My name's Alan Potts. I'm a Pearl District resident, and I live at 949 Northwest Overton Street. I agree with the opinion of the chair of the design commissioner in her dissent when she concluded that the Fremont apartment proposal negatively impacts the Willamette Greenway and its use by all Portlanders and visitors who enjoy the waterfront. In order to expand the size of the Fremont apartments, the developer sought to sought a modification that would allow it to exceed the maximum 200-foot depth set out in the code. This modification means that a five-story building will directly abut the 25-foot